100 days on the place, yeah, man. It's a kick it, you know. That's right.
Yeah, me rolling and rock it to the beat, and me love the sound.
Oh, Chess, you can mess with the sound. Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round.
Yeah, me rolling and bobbing and going like a mad man. Oh, the man got the sweet day off and 19 no long, so me say.
Hey, 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 Digital Sister, and I am back from Africa. What a fabulous, wonderful experience that was. First of all, the flight, it just took like a day to get there. So, for example, we left on Thursday evening. We landed in Accra, Ghana, Friday night. So, basically a day of flying. We didn't have much time to hang out like in Amsterdam because we had to, you know, stay there to transfer, because I surely would have loved to go out and hang around a little bit in Amsterdam. I was there a couple years ago, and I just really, really love Amsterdam. The people, the culture, just a very cool place to be. But in any event, Ghana was just a wonderful experience. First of all, it was summertime there, so it was hot. So it's like 100 degrees, very, very hot. Plus, it's on the equator, so it's a different kind of heat, a more intense kind of heat. Found the people to be very, very nice, very spiritual, very gracious. It was interesting because so many of them have so little, but they were always so willing to share and were very gracious. And we look, at ourselves as Americans and other more developed countries, and in comparison, we have so much, but yet we are not nearly as gracious as some other people from other countries who don't have as much as we do. But did some very exciting things, you know, walked 500 feet down into a gold mine, and that was an incredible experience. First of all, it's such a dangerous occupation, so my hat's out to any miner, coal miner, diamond miner, any kind of miner, anybody that goes down deep into the ground like that, my hat is off to you. But it was so fascinating because you could just hold your flashlight up, you could just see gold all in the rocks. You didn't even have to strain to look for it. You just put your flashlight up and there was a patch of gold, or put it in this corner, there's another patch of gold. It was just all over the place. And the funny thing was, as we were walking down, and our tour guide heard one of the big trucks that crunches the rock coming down, and he said, you know, quick, get, you know, against the wall so we could let that big piece of machinery pass. So I must have touched the wall, and then I put my hands over my nose and mouth, you know, to cover it, because the fumes were a bit strong. So my face was, you know, was dirty, and I didn't even realize that. So when we walked back out from the mine, it was, you know, a steep incline going down, and was just as steep going up. So you had to really, you know, take your time because you were really walking uphill. And in any event, so we get out of the mine, and there's a security guard, you know, military, the whole nine yards there. And he looked at me and said, empty your pockets. And I'm like, oh my God, because flashes of Midnight Express came through my mind, even though it was a different situation, but I'm still in a foreign country, okay? So I empty my pockets, and he said, what's in there? And I said, well, I just have some money and my passport in there. So he kind of looked me over and went over me with one of those machines, you know, that would register whether or not you have any gold on you. And he let me go. But what we learned is that if you, you know, found a piece of gold as a miner or a visitor in the mine, and let's say you swallowed it with the hopes of it, you know, you not being caught, forget about it, because the machine, or I want to say Geiger counter, but I'm sure that's not what it is, but they run it up and down your body. So if you have even swallowed a piece of gold, it's going to register on that equipment. And what's going to happen? They are going to take you to the local hospital, and they are going to get that piece of gold out of you, however they have to get it out of you, whether it's from your mouth or whether it's from the other end. They will get that gold from you, and then you're going to be in some other trouble. But it was just fascinating, you know, to see the natural resource there. And the sad part is that, you know, the wealth doesn't seem to be filtering back into the country or the people in that surrounding area. And I'm thinking if we were in other places and there was a gold mine, you know, there might be some kind of a little souvenir shop, you know, or something. But there wasn't anything like that there. It was just basically military, you know, things were blocked off, but very fascinating experience to see gold like that. We also walked through the jungle about 45 minutes in another region, the Volta region, to get to the Agamotsu waterfall, which was just beautiful. And that was a 45-minute trek back through the jungle, but very, very interesting. And we happened to see some baboons on the side of the road as we were leaving that area. So that was pretty, pretty fascinating, too. We visited the, the W.E.B. Du Bois Center in Accra, where Dr. Du Bois spent his remaining years before he passed away. I believe it was 93 in Accra. So it was pretty very moving, I think, because, you know, you've read so much about him and what he did for Pan-Africanism and that sort of thing. So to be in a place that he worked and to touch his desk, I mean, that was pretty cool to me. And to visit his mausoleum, because he also is buried there on the property of the center, which I thought was very, very interesting. We also visited the Ashanti region, which is where the gold is, and that's where the gold mine was that we had the chance to actually visit. And we actually had the chance to see the Ashanti king walk across the grounds, and it was so interesting, just like you know, you're watching the presidential motorcade and the Secret Service with the dark glasses and the black suit and the walkie-talkies. Well, it was the same thing there in Accra, in that area. They were like, get back, so we had to get back, and we moved back, and we were really fortunate because we were able to see the present king of the Ashanti region walk across the courtyard to greet his subjects. Apparently he's a lawyer, so he does these kind of visits, I think, either weekly to that effect, where people can express their opinions or, you know, whatever they'd like to see different. So it was very fascinating to see that. And one of the most moving things, I think, was to go to the Elmina Slave Castle, which is on the Cape Coast. And so I thought I was going to be more emotional in terms of going there, but I guess I was emotional enough because it was disturbing. But you could still smell the death, the blood, the anguish that that building housed, and the souls of people that are still not resting because of the horror of the transatlantic slave trade. And so we went through the slave castle. It was a very big compound, cannons all around. You could see where the governor would stand on the balcony and pick the African women that they had rounded up to become slaves for the evening. And if they refused to sleep with him, then this is where the term ball and chain came about, when you're talking about, you know, a wife, a spouse, mother-in-law, whatever. But when that woman refused the advances of the governor, she was put in iron shackles, and basically that was attached to a cannonball, and she was left out in the courtyard in this heat, and I'm talking like major heat, for days, without water, without food, to break the spirit and to let the other women know that were rounded up, that if you refuse the governor, that this would happen to you. And so we were able to walk through and go actually into some of the rooms where the Africans were held for, you know, months at a time until the slave ships came to take them to various places in the world. And so there was one room which was very small, and then there was a door, and that was called the Door of No Return. And once the Africans went through that door, they never returned to their homeland again. They were gone. So that was why it was called the Door of No Return. And I think that was probably the most moving and most disturbing part for me, because I just, you know, as a human being, you just think, oh my God, how horrible, and how would you feel if you were in that situation? And so that was the part that really disturbed me. But there were some wreaths that people left in that particular area. So I was moved enough, and I guess had the presence of mind to leave a note that said, "We survived. Rest in peace." So, you know, I felt I left a little something that all that anguish, you know, was not in vain. But just a wonderful experience to see it and to feel it and to get a sense of what that must have been like. But it was just a wonderful experience. I mean, I'm already getting emails, and I've even gotten some phone calls from people in Ghana, which I will follow up on, and that's going to be very cool, because that's going to enable me to develop, you know, that international presence, if you will, and then also have connections with people who live there. So it was a wonderful experience, life-changing experience. It makes you, I think, very grateful for what you have, and it makes you realize how much we have and how much we take for granted. And, you know, I'm sure that's going to pepper how I look and think about things. When you see the buildings that the kids go to, that is their school, but they are there. They want to learn. They're so eager to learn. And their parents have to pay for their education. So if the family is unable to pay, then, you know, that child is not going to be able to go to school unless, you know, he or she has a patron or a sponsor of some sort. So we in America and other developed countries have a lot to be thankful for, and I think we should really stop and think about what a good life and how fortunate we really are, because with the ability to travel, and, you know, and I'm not even knocking that, because you can drive through various parts of town in your own cities and see poverty, but rest assured, you will not see poverty in your country the way you see poverty in another country. So our poverty still has people living better than some of the poverty that I saw. But, you know, that's okay. It's a place that I want to go back to. I really enjoyed it, and it was a great experience, and I'm just looking forward to taking that trip again. And so I had my tape recorder. I did a little recording. You know, I did go swimming in a couple of the hotel pools, and we did a lot of traveling to different regions, Accra, the Central region, the Ashanti region, and the Volta region, and another area, a city called Ho. So we traveled quite a bit, and really by the last day of the trip, all I wanted to do was lay around the pool and swim, which I did for hours, and drink some tropical drink, and just really savored being in 100-degree weather, enjoying the summer while the rest of my friends and family were suffering through winter in Ohio. So, yeah, great experience. If you ever have a chance to travel to Ghana, to travel to Africa, do. because you'll see something very, very special, and you'll have a chance to meet, I think, some really wonderful people. So, yeah, great, great experience. And while I was down there, I saw the news about Anna Nicole Smith, and I thought, how sad. You know, I didn't know her, of course, you know, but she was in the news, but I thought, well, how tragic, you know. She's only 39, and, you know, the last few months with the death of her son, but yet the birth of her new baby, you know, caused her a lot of emotional turmoil. But I thought, you know, how sad that her life would end like that. And when you look at how her life was, you know, she was someone that obviously, you know, wanted to be in the spotlight, wanted to be seen, you know, was a celebrity of sorts. But it seemed with her to come at a price, and it was a price that I guess ultimately was too much for her. And it's so sad that, you know, much like the situation with James Brown, that they're fighting over her body. You know, they're fighting over where she should be buried. They're fighting over the child, because, you know, the child is the one who has, that's the money, okay? And I just think it's so sad that they're just fighting over all of these things. And much like the same with James Brown. I mean, the man died on Christmas Day back in December, and he still has not been buried, because his family with his daughters and his ex-wife or widow, whoever she is, Tommy Ray, they're fighting. And I just think, you know, if he could wake up and slap them, he would. I mean, come on. You know, bury the man. And what they're haggling over is apparently his estate was worth some 200 plus million. So they are really fighting over the estate and the control. And I guess, you know, when you're dealing with that kind of money, you get crazy. But my gosh, can't you at least bury the people and give them that kind of respect and dignity? So, you know, I think sad situations. You know, James Brown would not have liked that, and Anna Nicole would not have liked it either. So, you know, I'm just really, really sad that and sorry that her life ended the way it did. And, you know, I hope, you know, that she can at least, you know, rest in peace, and hope the matter will be resolved, you know, so it doesn't further tear all the other lives apart. Anyway, what's going on here with the satellite companies? XM and Sirius are merging. I mean, how interesting is that? And I wonder, okay, with them merging, what's that going to do for, you know, consumers? Are they going to have to pay more for subscribing to this new combined service, or will the price of a subscription drop because now they have even more clout? You know, what will happen with some of the programming? Because, you know, there's a finite number of channels, so I'm wondering what the shakeout's going to be, which programs will stay, which programs will go, and will some of the other programs, like some of the hip-hop stars that have shows like Snoop and Ludacris, will they also still be on, or will having one big network really pare down who's going to have the shows? So that's going to be interesting to see how it pans out, and also because both companies have invested big bucks in offering top-line people in entertainment. You know, Howard Stern getting big bucks from Sirius. And then we have, I'm sorry, is the XM? I'm not sure which one he's with. But anyway, but getting big bucks for that. And, you know, it's just going to be very interesting to see how all of this really pans out. And will the consumer benefit, or is it strictly going to be one of these deals that the guys who put together the deals benefit from? So interesting to see how that's going to pan out. And apparently, even though satellite is one of those new kind of medias, it's still you know, has been struggling to find its place. And so I think there's a place for a lot of things, but again, you just have to figure out what works. You know, people like satellite, people like the internet, people like podcasting. So I think it's going to give people more variety, but I just wonder how that's going to pan out for consumers and the whole thing against antitrust. And, you know, they keep breaking things up, but then these things get back together. So in any event, it'll be interesting to see how this pans out over time. And when the Oscars are coming up, and this is pretty much a very interesting year because for the first time, there are five African Americans being nominated for either Best Actor or Best Supporting Actor or Best Supporting Actress. So I think that is very, very cool that there's some diversity of nomination. So that's very interesting. So we have Will Smith, who's being nominated for The Pursuit of Happiness. We have Forest Whitaker for The Last King of Scotland. We have Jaimin Hansu for Blood Diamond, Eddie Murphy with Dreamgirls, and Jennifer Hudson also of Dreamgirls. So it'll be very interesting to see how this pans out and who will win. Are we going to have two Black awardees like we had a couple years ago with Denzel and Halle Berry, or are we going to have to wait a couple years, or will we have some breakthrough with maybe another African-American, you know, taking home Best Actor and Best Supporting Actress? Only thing I have to say is, unfortunately, even though we have Jennifer Hudson as Best Supporting Actress, we still don't have any African American or really any other woman of color in the Best Actress category. So I'm hoping that that will change, because it seems as though the roles were going for the males. So I'm hoping that in the future there'll be some vehicles for, you know, more women of color to have a shot at being nominated for Oscar. But yeah, this is kind of great that we're seeing more diversity in the Oscar nominations. And I think that speaks to the, what do you call that? I want to say the organization or the people who are part of the Academy for nominating. So that seems to me that the quality of films are better and that they're more open to nominating people of color for these awards. So I think that's good. So it'll be interesting to see if anybody of color takes it or not. But I think just by the fact that that we have five nominees, that's pretty cool. And Jennifer Hudson said it herself. She said, "I'm just enjoying being a nominee." You know, I don't think she would probably love to win, but I don't think that is something that's uppermost in her mind. She's just enjoying the ride and enjoying the success and breakout success that she had with Dreamgirls, you know, even though she was booted from American Idol, you know, maybe a year or so before she was fortunate enough to get that. Well, I just had another great interview with singer Jay Rush, who, as I mentioned, was my first interview for my podcast. I'm, you know, learning how to put all that together for the podcast, so I hope to have that up for your listening pleasure in a couple of days, you know, maybe a week, who knows. But it was a great, great interview, so if you can, check out my program, Demystifying Nonprofits, on www.globaltalkradio.com, and you can click on the interview and listen to Jay talk about his career and how it's blowing up. And we even have a couple of cuts that we played, his song Change and Every Day. So it was just a delight to talk to and very refreshing, because he doesn't like all the traditional industry hype. He seems to be kind of a very serious guy. He takes his craft very seriously. He's kind of outside outside of the box, if you will. Likes to keep things real. He doesn't call his music R&B. It's R&G. G standing for gangsta, because he doesn't like all the sappy love stuff that, you know, we hear in a lot of the ballads. He likes to keep it real and sing about some of the bad things that happen, you know, in relationships, so it's not all cookies and cream. So he was just a delight to talk to again. I just want to thank Phelana Marie Bowles for arranging that again, and helping to, you know, continue to help put Digital Sister on the map. Just great time talking to him, and I think you'll enjoy interview also. Let me just shift gears a little bit with the politics. I mean, what's going on? I mean, I help me understand it. How is it that we have a president who just wants to do what he wants to do, but doesn't want to work within the checks and balances that we have, you know, within the government to make sure that things don't get tipped one way or the other? And, you know, I guess just kind of issuing that challenge that he's going to send more troops in regardless of what Congress comes up with. You know, I just wonder, it's like, well, we couldn't do that. The average person couldn't just, you know, go against the grain and make up their own rules and say, well, I'm just going to do this anyway without repercussions. So I'm just wondering, you know, I just don't understand it. You know, I don't want to, you know, berate and talk about the man, but I don't understand it. And I don't understand why we don't have more backbone in the Senate. I think we are seeing some rumblings even from people in his own party who are standing up and saying, hey, we better look at this. Maybe this isn't the right way to go. But I really would love to see our senators, you know, stand up and stand up for something. Because we just see too much glad-handing. I mean, you know, McCain is slamming Rumsfeld, but he didn't do that earlier, you know. You have people flip-flopping on their positions. You know, you just want people to just, like, who are you really? Who are we voting for? What do you stand for? You know, it's just too much partisan politics. What about just standing up for what you believe is right, not just going along and towing the party line? And there's articles in the paper where they're talking about how older people in the military are having a tough time because they've raised the age from 35 to 40 as the cutoff age. Why? Because you need more and more people to fight in the services and the different branches of services. You know, and people are not signing up in droves. You're having to call soldiers back for 2 and 3 tours of duty. You're calling up National Guard reservists, where that's not really their job anyway. They are to handle issues within the state, not to be fighting wars. So, you know, you're running out of people because people are not signing up, and the young people are not running in droves to sign up for this either. And so, as I was saying a moment ago in the paper, they're wondering, how are they going to fill, you know, that final 10% of people? Older ones, because of the toughness of the training and physical ability, you know, they're older, so that's going to be more difficult for them. And as I said, the young people are like waking up and saying, hey, I'm not willing to just, you know, risk my life just yet. You know, I'd like to live a little bit and see something. So I just don't understand where he's going to get the troop levels to do these things. And then he's talking about possibly dealing with Iran. I mean, that's like 3 wars, you know, if that comes to pass. And I don't know how you can sustain 3 wars, you know, without really truly bankrupting the country and just really causing even more havoc. So I really hope that, you know, I just hope that our checks and balances and those things that we have in place will come into play, and people will get some backbone and stop, you know, worrying about their career in politics and staying there forever. I mean, do what's right. Do what's in the best interest for the future. You know, this is not the best interest. But anyway, let me get off that soapbox. But I don't know. Help me understand it, because I'm not getting it. Well, in any event, I think this is probably it for tonight. I still have a little jet lag. And, you know, the funny part is, you know, I forget that that's what it is, because there was about a 5-hour difference, you know, and the 7-hour flight across the ocean, and then the 6-hour time change with that. So, you know, a lot of time changes and things like that. So it's so funny, like, you know, 5 o'clock in the evening, 8 o'clock, I'm yawning. I'm tired because my body's feeling like it's 11 and that I should already be in bed. And then in the morning, you know, I wake up early because, you know, my body's thinking it's later in the day. So, you know, you wake up at 2 or 3 a.m. and, you know, there's nothing to do except watch a little TV until you fall asleep again. So I have a feeling I'm going to be twisted up a couple of more days until, you know, my body gets adjusted to being back on its regular schedule. And so I'm ending this a little early tonight because why? I am tired. It feels like it's midnight. My body's feeling like that, but it's not. So in any event, I think it's time for me to say good evening and to have a good evening. And I will be back with you in a few more days. And, you know, I don't know why this little Microsoft music is coming up, but, you know, it just is. In any event, Digital Sister signing out. Have a great week and take care.
The West Side.